Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. In this second part to the final interview with the Chief, it will review the controversial 2026 budget deliberations. He will also talk about the modernization of policing, along with a host of other topics. Have a listen and see if you agree with his assessment and the legacy he left behind. Earlier we spoke about budgets. But the 2026 budget increase seemed to have been one of the more controversial items you faced as chief. You defended the cuts. One thing you promised was this year was a correction. As you walk away, do you think your position will be borne out, or will your successor be left facing continuing budget pressures that will drive the need for further steep increases?
I don't want to bind my successor, but I can tell you right now, everything, unless we're talking about layoffs or substantive changes to program delivery, the budget is the budget. It's not going away. Once again, under strong mayor powers, they dipped into reserves to get the number down to what the budgetary number was to be. Very publicly, it's not secret. It's not that there is one more round of this gamesmanship where we can borrow from reserves before there are no reserves. I was very clear with the board. I don't know what the board selection committee did. I don't know what the hiring committee communicated to the prospective chiefs, but, without substantive change to program delivery, which in policing with 90% of our budget being salaries, benefits, and pensions, unless there's a substantive change to program delivery and or staffing, the budget is going to start at 20.5%, except now that we are in an economic crisis where fuel is more expensive, insurance is going up, salaries continue to rise. So 20.5 is where we're starting. It's not where it's going to end.
You are a longtime advocate for the modernization of policing, including tiered policing. As you look to the future, what changes do you think must be made to meet the demands?
If I was entering into the role of chief today, I would be saying A, tiered policing is the way we have to go, but beyond what I ever envisioned. Tiered policing is now public safety defined. And we are becoming closer and closer to the English model, where we need to really look at what is public safety in a community. And public safety is not policing. Public safety is fire services. Public safety is municipal law enforcement. Public safety is mental health treatment. Public safety is police. This pocket, this envelope, this giant bucket, that's what tiered policing needs to look like. Like, we need fire, like we've done here in Coburg, to take over property standards. We need municipal law enforcement to manage bylaw, to manage a lot of those community crises that are well outside of what a police officer does. London police is doing it. Other communities are doing it, where municipal bylaw are dealing with all of the neighbor disputes. They're dealing with all of the noise complaints. They're dealing with all that stuff that traditionally landed in the house of the police. Well, now we're saying that there are really great trained individuals who work for municipal bylaw, who are ready to go, ready to serve, and actually in some circumstances know what we do better than what we do. So, that's what tiered policing will be in the future. I think the fundamental idea that we enjoy the community, we enjoy our charter rights and freedoms, means we need to revisit what public safety sounds and feels like.
I'd like you to step back for a moment and take a look at your career from a different perspective. Your family is important to you. What impact do you think your career has had on your wife and children?
I'm going to get in trouble because I've been out there. Everybody works. Everybody has sacrificed, right? So anybody who's married to a first responder or anybody who's married to an emergency room physician or an on-call doctor, they deal with sacrifice. But what I neglected to say, and my wife reminded me, like I said, that kick in the rear end, that she's been 35 years good at that. She reminded me that it also created great opportunity for my family. It created opportunity where on shift work, I was able to be a principal parent and not a daycare parent, right? In other words, I was days off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday when my wife was at work. So I was an active parent. So it created that opportunity. It was gainful employment. So I was able to provide for my family financially. The impact is the impact. Like I say to every graduating class of recruits, I always make them look at their family when they're in the audience there. And I always say to the parents, the person you gave to us will be forever changed. There will be a call or a series of calls which will forever change them. Your job is to try to corral them as best you can. So my kids have missed birthdays. I jokingly said the other day that my daughter's born July 9th, my son's born December 9th, but we celebrated birthdays within 5 days of that day anyway, left or right, based on what dad's schedule looked like. And at the end of the day, sometimes they knew, sometimes they didn't know. Going through photo albums, there's lots of pictures of dad sitting there, Christmas Day in uniform or Easter Sunday in uniform. But then again, you could look at that as a negative thing. You could look at that as a positive thing, that I worked in a community and I worked for an organization that allowed that to happen. And not everybody has that. So pretty fortunate.
If they were going to assess your career, what do you think they might say about you as a police officer?
Oh, couldn't turn the job off. They'll say that I never was able to turn the job off. In a couple of ways, I can still remember. I try to treat with everybody with respect and give everybody the benefit of the doubt in every circumstance. Sometimes too much. And I can remember sitting in the Quinney Mall with my young lad, and I forget what the reason was, but he'd won some bet or earned something. So we're sitting in the food court having something to eat. And a person walked by, very obvious, stereotypical bad guy, if you will, in air quotes. And he came right up and I looked at him and I went, oh God, the last time I saw you was a judge and jury trial and you were sentenced to the penitentiary for aggravated assault. And I thought, what is this going to feel like? And he walked up and he said, good afternoon. How are things? Thanks for everything you've done. I'm a better man today. My son looked at him with his tattoos and everything else. And my son looked at me and said, who is that, Dad? And I said, oh, that's just some guy from Dad's work. And I left it at that. Well, for years, my kid kept looking for that guy around the police station every time we'd go there. I was the vice president of the Belleville Minor Hockey Association, but I was also a police officer. So we'd go to the rinks and I'd be coaching or convening a league and somebody'd walk up and say, hey, Paul, do you got a minute? I want to run something by you. I absolutely have a minute. Absolutely have a minute. I got daughter-in-laws now and they didn't see that side of me, but they've seen the other side of me where I just got to take this phone call. I just got to nip in. I'm just on call. But they know that the job is the job, and I lived it. I was saying, somebody asked me, what am I going to, maybe you're going to ask me this question. Maybe I'll leave it. If you don't ask me it, I'll tell you that anecdote later.
You can go ahead now if you want.
Somebody asked me, what's the biggest change you're going to see once you retire? And my answer was, sometimes as I often do, too quick. My answer was, for the first time since 2006, I'll be able to go to bed without my phone on the night table. I've been on call, part-time or full-time, since 2006. That means 20 years of middle-of-the-night phone calls, middle-of-the-morning phone calls, before I figured out how to put the thing on silent and the phone to work, bings and emails and bongs and notifications, and getting up at 1 o'clock in the morning and in the kind of house, all of a sudden dad's up, the dogs are up, the cat's up, everyone's moving because dad's got to take a phone call, and getting up in the morning because everything was supposed to be normal. And where's dad? And the whole world is, okay, you got to go here. You're going to go there because dad got called in last night and he has not made it home yet. And that was one of those sexual assault cases. I still remember that, getting a call at 10 o'clock at night. And it was a shaken baby case. And by the time I got home, it was 2 days later. My wife was kind enough to drop a clean suit and some clean underwear at the station as we flew in and out.
What are you going to do when you retire?
I am going to take the next couple of months and I'm going to kick around my rural property that we bought ourselves. And I'm going to do some hardscaping and I'm going to build a deck around this above ground pool. I'm going to get into my workshop. I'm going to listen to the birds. I'm going to play golf poorly. I'm going to live vicariously through my kids and all the great things. I'll know more about MPAC for my daughter's work, and I'll go back to patrol work with my son in Peterborough, who's a patrol officer. So I'm just going to kick back for a bit. As they always say, no chief generally leaves the job. They just do something else around the job. But I'm going to truly relax and enjoy the summer.
I understand you bought a farm. Are you going to start a new career in agriculture?
I don't know if it's a farm, Rob. It used to be a farm. It was a new build in 1874. It's a United Empire Loyalist home. Limestone home north of Kingston. It has about 10 acres on it. It's got an old dilapidated barn, an old chicken coop. It's got beautiful property. It's got a nice workshop. And we are going to see whether the barn can be rebuilt. And if it can, we'll, as I joked with the past chair, Ron Kerr, he and I had a thing. I forget what in the community was driving us both crazy. I said, forget it, Ron. I'm going to quit and raise goats. So if I get the barn fixed, maybe I'll raise goats.
Do you have any hobbies?
Yeah, I do. I'm a workshopper. I love to get in the workshop. I just haven't had the time to dedicate to become proficient at it. So it frustrates me. So I'm going to be in the workshop. I'm going to spend some time there. I'm going to be outdoors. My wife and I used to travel. We don't travel as much, but we're going to maybe try that a bit. But I'm going to really enjoy being with my wife and being present. That'll be a great hobby.
Do you have any guilty pleasures you're going to indulge more now that you're retired?
Well, do I have guilty pleasures? Yeah, I can spend a lot of money on tools, so I better watch that. The Minister of Finances, I nicknamed my wife. There, I'll have to make grant applications for that. You know what? I live a pretty simple life, right? I like to read. I like to play in my workshop. I like to cut grass now. I got a bit of grass to cut. I'm going to play golf poorly. I still have my baseball. I'm a Jays fan, so I'm going to watch that painful episode for the next 80 whatever games are left. I don't drink too much. I don't smoke. I just enjoy space and time.
How much of your job has been managing politics versus leading police and addressing the operation?
In a small town, I'm just trying to phrase the answer here. So in a small town policing, it has to be about the politics because you have to know what's coming. If you're not wise to it, it's going to get you. I've been blessed to be working in small mid-time services for quite some time, obviously. And I know I consult and I do some work with new chiefs in small services. And I tell them that you got to work with your politicians. You got to work with your councils. You've got to work with your boards. You have to create that lane of space because when conflict happens, you have to have foundational blocks of success to go back to because conflict will happen. Like it is inevitable. You will have it. It will come to you. But I would say And I'm also a bit of a weirdo in that I don't mind working 90 hours a week, but I would say about 50-50, you know, like you're managing the operations and you're managing the politics, but really when you hear the politics and you're proactive and strategic, you're bringing that back into the operations.
Are there any trends in policing or related to policing that you see taking place now that have you concerned for the future?
Recruiting. It's not a job that many people want. So we have to make sure that we're still finding the right people to become police officers. Supervision. Because we are very young and that's just a demographic time, we have to make sure that we're having the right people lead and supervise in the middle levels. Middle management is really, really key. And then finding the right people to be chiefs of police. That recruiting and that human piece in policing is really going to be a problem. It's going to be a problem. We are going to have problems in 10 years down the road on this. Boards. I said I've worked for boards for since 2010, and now the changing act, the way boards are, I truly believe that we have to consider how boards are comprised, and because there's far more responsibility placed on police services boards and accountability. So I think the province is fine to have the new act, and the act is right. Now they have to follow that up with making sure the right people are on the boards, the right people are driving the accountability piece forward to ensure harmony. I think that's going to be a thing that's going to come. The strong mayor powers isn't gone away. It's going to be there. That's something that provincially, if over the next 3 to 5 years, that are going to matter. But really, when I look at it, we have to look at people, always people. And I just think that there's a couple of big storms coming from a staffing point of view and supervision to ensure we have the right people leading at the right time.
If you were to give one piece of advice to your successor, what would it be?
Listen. Just listen. Not now. Not for the first 30, 60, 90 days, whatever the stupid interview question is. Always listen. I haven't been good at it necessarily. I am good at it, but I can be better at it. But I always go back to that old saying that God give us two ears and one mouth. That should tell us something. So my advice would be to listen, 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 and then listen more.
If you were to sit down in front of a Cobourg resident, what one thought would you like to leave them with before you leave?
The silent majority or the loud minority? Which group am I talking to?
I'll leave it to you to decide.
Thank you. That would be my last parting remark. Would just be, it is an honor to serve as a police officer in any community. Like the fact that our people forget that, that's tragic. Like the fact that we're given this responsibility and this right and this privilege to wear a uniform and to be a police officer in this province is something that we need to remember. So I guess if I was sitting down on either side, I would say to them, thank you. Thank you for allowing me to serve. I did my best. The team delivered where you wanted us to deliver and continue to support your police service.
Chief Paul Vandegraaff, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Rob.
That was Cobourg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff.
I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at ConsiderThisNorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast, or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.